והוא היה אומר, he used to say. And of course you'll say that the reason for this introduction is because the people, the authors of these statements, this is what they used to speak about constantly. Hu haya omer. There were certain themes that these people had played on their minds, their whole essence, their whole being, were caught up with these words that they spoke about. And therefore the Mishnah always introduced this with Hu haya omer. I know that one of the topics that was very close to Rabbi Gold is exactly the topic that he's speaking about tonight. Now, can we just say that Hu haya omer? There is one word of introduction I'd like to say. That the topic for tonight's discussion is for the shiur is anatomy of self-hatred, Jewish self-hatred. It's a very, very tough topic. It's Rabbi Shalom, you know, so Rabbi Shalom's name is exactly that, Shalom, peace. There could be no one who is really more fitting to speak about a tough topic, a topic about hatred, but coming from a person whose whole personality is all about Shalom, all about peace. Everything that you'll hear is not said in a sense, in a sense of hatred, in a sense of bitterness, but one of compassion for his people, one said by Rav Shalom Gold, the man of peace, like gives me a great pleasure to introduce Rav Shalom to you.
I have one already. We're very professional over here, all right? Thank you very much, Rabbi Katz. You've already cramped my style when you tell me that I'm the man of peace, and here I was getting ready to get all excited, but I will get excited anyway. We'll get excited. And I want to say that you should have great success over here. Your congregation has chosen well. Chosen very, very well. Talmud Chacham, scholar, a big mensch. It's a painful topic. It's a very painful topic. But it's a topic that has troubled me for many years. And over the years, I've studied it and restudied it. And of all things, I take it that you people read the Jerusalem Post. Well, if you read the Jerusalem Post, you should have stopped twice this week. First of all, you can't read the Jerusalem Post without reading Carolyn Glick. Understand? Carolyn Glick had an article in the middle of this week about two Jews who hate Jews, who are Sone Yisrael. I have the article here. Today's Jewish Anti-Semites. That was the title of the article. One of them is a fellow by the name of Anthony Lippman, an Anglican, but the child of Jewish Holocaust survivors. And the second one is Tony Jutt. And these fellows have been doing a lot of writing. She says about Tony Jutt in a series of articles in the New York Review of Books, The Nation and the New Republic, Jutt has led the charge in claiming the depressing truth is that Israel today is bad for Jews. And that for Jews to feel good about themselves again, Israel must cease to exist as a Jewish state. This is a phenomenon. We weren't finished with that. I was still recovering from Carolyn Glick's article, and then on Friday, Birnbaum adds chord to Columbia anti-Zionist tune. Daniel Birnbaum, the great musician, We know already that Daniel Birnbaum is the one who, of course, has brought Wagner to Israel, forced it down our throats when there was a vote taken it should not be played, and he played it anyway. So there he was at a memorial lecture for, of all people, Edward Said. Edward Said is an Arab, I think he tries to call himself a Palestinian, who died a few years ago. And here he came, and in his eulogy for Edward Said, an unbridled attack against the Jewish state and against the Jewish people. Daniel Birnbaum, what moves such people? What is it that's the cause of this phenomenon that's so painful? They're not the only ones. We'll talk about others during the course of this lecture, Shir. But the fact is that throughout all of history, we know that some of the worst oppressors of Jews were of Jewish extraction. It even begins most probably, one of the first that I can think of, is there's a perek in Yeshayahu. It also appears in Sefer Melachim. The city of Yerushalayim is surrounded. Chizkiyo is the king inside the city. And Sancherib, king of... I always tell people to turn off their cell phones. And this is my cell phone going off. Chotosi... of VC Poshati. I forgot. Chotosi of VC Poshati. Poor fellow on the other side, I'm not even interested who it is. It's my mistake. All right. I won't make it again. Anyway, standing outside the city is a fellow by the name of Rav Shokei. And Rav Shokei calls up to the Jews standing on the ramparts of Yerushalayim, "Why have you rebelled against Sennacherib, king of Assyria? Who do you think you're going to be able to place your trust in? In this God of yours, the God of Israel? Do you know how many deities have already been destroyed by Sancheret, king of Asher? How are you ever going to stand up against the mighty king of Asher?" It's a frightening, frightening comment in the Gemara, the Sechta Brachas. The Bach says, Rav Shokei, who blasphemes God, and those who are standing on the ramparts tear kniya when they hear Rav Shokei. He's the son of Chizkiyo HaMelech. The son of Chizkiyo. Unbelievable. Son of a great pious king. We have no guarantees. We have no guarantees. Some of the greatest may end up with children who will of kein yid nish gezukt azar klola. But there are, and there have been, throughout all of history. I believe they say that Pablo Cristiani, the one who challenged the Ramban to theological debate, was a mummer, a meshumet. We've suffered terribly throughout all of history. What's more disturbing is that the phenomenon has grown in recent years to most probably what one could seriously call epidemic proportions. We have it all over. We have it all over. Shalom Achshav has its people in Yehuda v'Shomron in order to announce to the world, if somebody closed in a mirpeset, you understand, in Yehuda v'Shomron, the world has to know that Jews are building in Yehuda v'Shomron. A caravan goes up someplace. The whole world knows of it. What's their problem? What is their problem? Where does this hatred to Klal Yisrael, and by the way, it's a hatred of Eretz Yisrael as well, where does it come from? I think we have to know where it comes from. We have to know at least in part. We will never understand but there is something to it. And maybe I will hold out for the end of this year a silver lining to this terrible, terrible, terrible cloud. So here we have, Berenbaum. So I'll tell you, it was a very upsetting week for me. Today my gosh in shul this morning, I got up in shul and I said, you know, I didn't really plan on talking this morning because I've been so upset all week. And then I decided, you know, maybe a rabbi sometimes should get up and tell his congregation what's bothering him. So you should know what upsets me. So I told them what upsets me. One of the things that upset me this week is, I only listen to the radio when I'm driving. So I think it was Sunday or Monday I had to hear soon Sylvan Shalom is going to speak in the United Nations, and for the first time in history, Kael Malei Rachamim is going to be sung in the august hall of the General Assembly building. And then on Thursday we heard about Auschwitz. Cantor Yosef Malavani is going to sing Kael Malei Rachamim at Auschwitz. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the last thing I would sing. You know why it's the last thing I would sing? Because I think Goyim love to hear Kael Malei Rachamim. Kael Malei Rachamim is for dead Jews. They love it. You know what I would have done if I would have been Cantor Malavani? I would have sung Am Yisrael Chai Zon Zetze Platz Feren. That's what I would have sung. But Kemal Erachman, they love it. They eat it up. And of course, we're a very optimistic people. I think sometimes we're so optimistic we lose touch with reality, as though, what a change is taking place, the whole world's attitude to us, as though they're going to be lovers of Judaism now. Peace is breaking out all over the place. Abu Mazen and Mahmoud Dahlan are going to protect us and save us. The Mashiach is coming. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Sometimes we're so foolish. We're so foolish. Is it me?
Yes.
Put it down here. So I think that this phenomenon has to be studied, and we're going to begin studying it. The fact is that the phenomenon is such that it has really changed the meaning of a pasuk in Tanakh. And most people aren't even aware what the real pshat in the pasuk is. It's sort of an expression already. It comes from a pasuk in Yeshayahu. Maharsayich umachrivayich mimeich yetzeyu. Your shatterers and destroyers mimeich yetzeyu, they come from you. The worst anti-Semites come from Klal Yisrael. That was not the meaning of the pasuk. I think what you have to know is you have to know the real meaning of the pasuk. The pasuk over there, it's in chapter 49 of Yeshayahu. It says, Miharu Banayich. Your children, your sons are hurrying home. They're coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And you know what's going to happen as a result of Jews coming home? Maharsayich umachrivayich. All of those who lived in Eretz Yisrael before you came and really destroyed the land, they're going to have to leave. The Das Mikra says, Hamoshlim be'Eretz Yisrael, those who rule in Eretz Yisrael and who really destroyed the land, and also Goyim from neighboring lands that came to live in Eretz Yisrael, and this is not their country. They're ultimately going to leave. We're going to displace them. I can be sent to prison for saying that. That's the pshat in the pasuk. But because of this phenomenon of Jews that are destructive of Jews, we gave the pasuk a whole new meaning. That maharsayich umachrivayich, your shatterers and destroyers, come from your very midst. I really was shaking when I read an article some weeks ago in the Hatzofer that, you know, we get upset. We get upset when there are swastikas on graves in France, or hate mail, hate literature sent in the mail in Canada. And the seller writes, Lo Yaleinu, there's only one country on the face of this earth where Jews are destined to be removed from their homes by fellow Jews. Very scary, very disturbing, very upsetting phenomenon. So what's it all about? What's it all about? What are we to make of it? How do we understand it? I'm going to present an approach. I don't want to use the word answer because there's no way that I can answer truly the meaning of this phenomenon. And I can begin with a Rashi in today's Sedra. At the very beginning of the Sedra, it says that Yitro came with Tzipporah and Moshe's children out into the desert. The name of the second son was Eliezer. He called his name Eliezer because he said, Moshe had said, Elokei Avi Be'ezri, the God of my father saved and assisted me. Vayatzileini Micheref Paro, he saved me from the sword of Paro. And Rashi says, when was Moshe saved from the sword of Paro? And Rashi says, when Dothan and Aviram reported Moshe to Paro, and they told Paro that Moshe killed the Mitzvi, so he was brought before Paro, was going to be put to death by the sword. And Rashi says, it's in the name of the Medrash, that Moshe's neck became Amud Shayish, it became a pillar of marble. Do you understand? Two Jews report Moshe. And what was Moshe doing? Let's take a closer look at what happened over there. Moshe goes out on the first day, he grows up. In Parashat Shemot, he goes out on the first day and he sees an Egyptian who is striking a fellow Jew. He can't tolerate it. Vayifen ko vacho, he looks here and there. He's looking, does anybody care? Is anybody going to come to the aid and the assistance of this Jew? Is there somebody to talk to? Does anybody care? Is anybody interested? When he sees that there's nobody who's ready to stand up for this Jew, he strikes the Egyptian and he buries him in the ground. He goes out on the second day and there are two Jews who are struggling with one another. Two Jews struggling with one another. So he says to the one who's striking the other, Rasha, Lama Takereha, why do you strike him? Why do you strike him? So the two of them say to him, who made you an officer and a judge over us? Halahargeni Atome, do you want to kill me the way you killed the Egyptian? And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ocheno, Dahadavar, it's known. And he feels that his life is in danger and he flees. Rashi says, it's the Medrash. Who are these two Jews who are fighting with one another? The two who were fighting with one another were Dothan and Aviram. Dothan and Aviram. What's fascinating about it is, the Gemara says that Dothan and Aviram were fighting to kill each other. Who saves their lives, or at least one life? It's Moshe. How is he repaid for that? He's repaid for it by reporting to Paro, and he must flee 40 years. He's going to be away from his people. What's worse, who was the Jew on the first day that was being struck by the Mitzri? Rebbe says, Dothan. Moshe saves Dothan on the first day. And on the second day, Dothan is going to report him to Paro. Is this madness? Stark raving madness. What does it all mean? The Medrash says, these two fellas, Dothan and Aviram, they're the ones in last week's Sedra B'Shalach, when Moshe said, don't leave over any of the mon until morning, they're the ones who leave over mon. Also in last week's Sedra, as they're standing by the Yamsuf, The Red Sea is in front of them, dark, ominous. And on the other side, they hear the Egyptian hordes coming toward them, 600 chariots. Can you imagine? Klal Yisrael is caught in a vice. This is going to be Dunkirk. And Nitna Rosh v'Noshuva Mitzrayma. Let's go back to Egypt. One of the ugliest statements in all of Torah appears in there in Parsha B'Shalach. Hamibli ein kvarim. You know, we read it so often, we don't feel the full horror of what's being said. Hamibli ein kvarim b'Mitzrayim, because there aren't enough graves in Egypt. You took us out so that we should die in the desert. This is what you say to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's unbelievable. Is this real? Accusing Moshe, it was all a plot. There aren't enough graves in Mitzrayim. And this is when Klal Yisrael find themselves in the gravest moment of their history. And these two fellas are standing on the beach. It's Dosav Aviram, the Gemara says. They're the ones who say Moshe took and Aaron took us out of Mitzrayim because there weren't enough graves over there. This is unbelievable. It's ugly. It's ugly. Remember many years ago, I read a book, I don't remember the name, by Dame Edith Sitwell. You English over here, you're going to have a rough time now. Dame Edith Sitwell studied the British Adam spies. You remember the Adam spies? That's probably great trivia to remember. The Cambridge Four, they were called Kim Philby, Donald McLean, Guy Burgess, and Anthony Blunt. They were the four British Adam spies who gave secrets to the Russians. Adam's secrets to the Russians. Starting then, there was there were a lot of studies about what makes a spy, and here I have in front of me from a few years ago an article in the Jerusalem Post on the making of a spy. And they bring something, there was a study of the making of a spy by John Le Carr. So you got to listen to this one. As soon as I heard this one, I decided I'm not reading any more of John Le Carr's books. John Le Carr said the following: probing the mind of the traitor in a book called The Perfect Spy, he says, betrayal can only happen if you love. Right? You didn't get it. You have to let it sink into the kishkas. Betrayal can only happen if you love. In other words, he obviously loves somebody so much that he will betray his country. I don't know, does he love Russia? Does he love world peace? Ach, weiß nicht, was der Mensch errät wie ein schickerer Guy. You understand? So I should go read John Le Carr after this Geuser Chucham says that to betray, you have to love. You have to... God, I'm going to have to make sense out of all of this. That he was wrong was clear. Because Kim Philby, before he died in Russia in 1988, said the following very powerful statement that will begin to take us on the way to understanding. Kim Philby said, "To betray, you must first belong. I never belonged." I'll say it again. To betray, you must first belong. I have to belong to something in order to be able to betray it. Kim Philby said, "I never belonged." In order to understand his statement, it was Dame Edith Sitwell who studied the four Adam spies, the British, and she came to the conclusion that each one of them came from a dysfunctional family. Each one of them had no relationship with those closest to them. Either they had no relationship, or they had a painful and difficult relationship. Listen, Torah says, "V'yahavta reyacha kamocha," love your friend like yourself. Love has to begin in an atmosphere closest to you. If you love yourself, you can love the one closest to you. And if you love the ones closest to you, you can love people in the world out there. If you don't love yourself, and you don't love those who are closest to you, there's absolutely no way that you're going to love the world out there or love mankind. A lot of the people who are Jewish anti-Semites are the ones who profess to love the whole world. They have loads of love. And then when you begin to study them, you find out that they are absolutely dysfunctional. They don't love anybody. They most probably don't even love themselves. And you know where it begins with? This was my first approach. Gosan and Aviram are two brothers, the Medrash says, who are locked in a mortal struggle to the death. Is there a more dysfunctional family than that? These are dysfunctional people. And therefore, if they've never learned love of those closest to them, there's absolutely no way in the world that they're going to love anybody. They can easily betray. They don't belong. They don't belong to anybody. They don't belong anywhere. I'll give you an example. I'll give you a real example. One of the great lovers of peace and lovers of the world in this country is a man called Uri Avneri. Uri Avneri, I think, is one of the few Jews who was present at the Levaya of Yasser Arafat. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. He sang Keil Malei Rachamim over there. He is also the one. There are pictures of him saying that he's going to be a human shield when there was a report coming that Israel has targeted Arafat. Uri Avneri is going to stand there and protect Arafat. He'll take the bullet first. He's a lover of peace. Everybody buys it. Then I read an article once about Uri Avneri. When his mother died in 1988, they opened her will and she said, "Not a penny of what I have should go to my son Uri." For years I was ill in a nursing home. He came to visit me only once and never bothered about me ever, ever again. Uri Avneri made an agreement with his wife that they are not to have children. He doesn't want children. This big lover of mankind, the lover of Yasser. But he loves cats. He has a lot of cats. You know, the feline kind. You know, the little ones. He loves cats. And he has a house full of cats. But if a cat upsets him, he's very eminently capable of picking up this ketzaleh and throwing it out the window. If you're walking in Tel Aviv and you're struck by a ketzaleh, you will know exactly where it came from.
Helmut. His name is Helmut.
Helmut?
Helmut.
All right, Helmut. We're talking about a dysfunctional human being. He never attended a single family function. Once in his life, he came to a Seder, stayed for about an hour or two, made fun of everything at the Seder, got up and walked out. You're going to tell me that this man loves mankind, loves peace, loves Yasser Arafat? He's a dysfunctional person of the worst order. Dysfunctional. That's what Dame Edith Sitwell said. Dysfunctional people are the ones who can and are capable of betraying those closest to them because there's nobody close to them. They don't belong. As Kim Philby said, and if you don't belong, you're eminently capable of betraying. My problem is what I call my mother-in-law's kasha. My mother-in-law, Allah Shalom. You don't have to know who she was. She was a wonderful lady. I like my mother-in-law. tell you the truth, she liked me too. She liked me too. And over the years, as I've studied it, on the sheet that you have in front of you, I've brought not all, but many of the sources, many of the places where Dosom Vaviram appear in Torah. Many of where they appear. In number one, we had the story of Moshe Rabbeinu going out on the first day and then going out on the second day. And ultimately Moshe Rabbeinu must flee because Dosom Vaviram had betrayed him to Paro. In source number two, it's at the end of Parsha Shemot. And here there's a frightening, frightening medrash. And you'll see why the analysis is important. Moshe Rabbeinu is coming into Paro again to tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. And there are people standing out there and they say to him, Yehida Hashem Aleichem V'yishpot, let God see and let him judge. You've made us noisome in the eyes of Paro and in the eyes of his servants. You gave a sword into the hands of Paro and his servants to kill us. How can you do this to us? Who are these two that speak to Moshe and Aaron with such frightening chutzpah? You guessed it. Dosom Vaviram. And then Moshe Rabbeinu goes into Paro. And then when he comes out, he talks, turns to God, and he says one of those difficult things that Moshe Rabbeinu says in all of Torah. Vayomer Moshe says to Hashem, Lama hareyoso la'am azeh. Why were you so bad to this people? Why did you send me? From the time you sent me, things have gotten worse than before. Medrash says, Ha'oshek yeholeil chacham. The pressure that was placed on Moshe by Dosom Vaviram caused the great Chacham Moshe to act foolishly. He should never have said that to the Rabbi Nishalim. And God turns to him and he says, now you're going to see what's going to happen. And Rashi says over there, you're going to see what's going to happen in Egypt, but you're not going to be Zeicha anymore to see what's going to happen in Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu said something that he should not have said because he was placed under pressure by Dosom Vaviram. The Dosom Vavirams of this world are dangerous because they may affect and infect our thinking. We may begin to adopt positions that we would not adopt under other circumstances only because the Dosom Vavirams keep telling us. They've taken the finest of our people, the people of Yehuda v'Shomron, and have turned them into a pejorative, a crime, a high crime. People who settle there, it's so they are the enemy. It's unbelievable. This is Dosom Vaviram kind. Causes confusion. We don't know how to think straight anymore. We begin to believe, you know, it's a point. We'll give them this, we'll give them that. We'll go out of here, we'll go out of there. We're all going to live happily ever after. Our minds become confused by the Dosom Vavirams. If they were able to do that to Moshe Rabbeinu, why shouldn't they be able to do it to us? Sometimes we have to shake ourselves free of all of the nonsense and be able to see things clearly. Parshas B'Shalach, we talked about, here's an unbelievable one. Last week, Sedra, it says, God tells them to start journeying, turn around and start journeying back to Mitzrayim. So that Paro, Vo'oma Paro Livnei Yisrael, Paro will say, Livnei Yisrael, to the children of Israel, Rashi explains, Paro will say, about the children of Israel, that they're confused in the desert. They got lost over there. Strange. Va'ama Paro. Paro will say, it's underlined. Va'ama Paro l'vnei Yisrael. Nevuchim heim ba'oretz. They are confused in the land. Sogar aleihem amidbar. The desert has closed and locked them in. Down at the bottom of the page, I have a Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. Unbelievable. Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says, no, you know what the pshat is? Paro is going to speak to the Jews who have remained in Egypt. And who are the Jews that have remained in Egypt? Dosom Vaviram. You know what's even more amazing? Within 24 hours, these Dosan Vaviram who remained in Mitzrayim and whom Paro speaks to, they're most probably human shields for Paro. They find themselves on the beach the night of Kriyas Yamsuf. How did they get there? How did they survive the Mitzrayim experience? It's unbelievable. I get a feeling that there's some reason for their existence. There's some reason for it. And then, of course, number five, Hamidliyein Kvarim B'Mitzrayim. What did I do with number four? Oh, number four is down at the bottom. Number five, aren't there enough graves in Mitzrayim? I'll start telling you now what my Shvigas Kasha was. My mother-in-law, if somebody would say something hurtful, you know what happens. Sometimes there are people that say things to us and they hurt us and we're upset and in her. She always used to say, let it roll off your back. Don't pay attention to it. Hat er gesucht. Hat sie gesucht. So what if she said, look, forget about it. That's my question. I'm going to take you through a number of other sources of the ugliness of Dosan Vaviram. Why did Torah have to record it? Why did the Rebbe Yishma have to record it in Torah? And if one letter is missing, that Sefer Torah is puzzle. Who needed all the ugliness of Dosan Vaviram to be recorded for all time in the sanctity of Torah? Who needed it? Haben Sie gesucht? So what? Deal. Big deal. In Parshat B'Shalach again, they're the ones who leave over from the man. In Parshat Korach, there I think is the ugliest statement. Here we come to the ugliest statement in all of Torah. Vayishlach Moshe likro ledoson v'laviron b'nei Eliyav. Moshe and Aaron called to Doson v'laviron, the sons of Eliyav. This is in Parashat Korach. They are members of the Korach Rebellion. They are members in very good standing of the Korach Rebellion. And at one point, Moshe Rabbeinu decides what he wants to do is he wants to talk with them. He wants to negotiate. So Moshe sent to call to Dosan Vaviram, the sons of Aliyav, Vayomrim, and they said, Lo Na'ale, we're not going to come up to talk to you. They refused to come to Moshe. And listen to the two psukim that they say. Hama'at ki he'elitanu me'edet zav aschol avu dvash. It's not enough that you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Do you understand what they're saying here? That unique description of Eretz Yisrael that was coined by God Himself. They use that. They abuse it. And use that as a description of Mitzrayim. It's not enough that you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Lahamiteinu b'midbar, to kill us in the desert. Ki tistorer oleinu gam tistorer. You're also going to rule over us. Aflo el eretz zovas cholu v'dvash haviyotanu. You haven't brought us to a land flowing with milk and honey. Vatitan lonu nachlas soder kerem. You haven't given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. You think you can poke people's eyes out? We're going to listen to what you have to say. Lo na'ale, we refuse to come. Whenever I get to this pasuk that Mitzrayim is referred to as Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash, it shivers me timbers, it shakes me. Why does this ugliness have to appear in Torah? And what would have happened if the Rebbeinu would have left this out? We have to know it for all time, and we have to learn it? Who needs it? Who needs it? Haben Sie gesucht? Rabbeinu Shalom, let it roll off your back. How many times do I have to hear about Dosan Vaviram? How many times? Why do I have to hear, Hamidliyein Kvarim Mitzrayim? Aren't enough graves in Mitzrayim you took us out? You took us out in order to kill us in the desert. It's unbelievable. Who needs all of this? Who needs all of this? Maybe we'll take you to the last source. The last source is very very revealing. This is in Parashat Ekev. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jewish people the story of the 40 years of the desert. And in his story of the 40 years in the desert, he says, you saw with your own eyes, asher oso lachem bamidbar, what God did for you in the desert, ad barachem aramot mazah, until you came to this place. He describes, you were in Egypt, you were at the Red Sea, you watched, you've seen with your own eyes. It's at the end of the 40 years. He's talking to a generation that has traveled with him through the desert. You saw it all. And then he says, Vasher oso ledoson v'aviram b'nei Eliyav, you saw with your own eyes what God did to Doson v'aviram, the sons of Eliyav, the son of Reuven, that the earth opened up its mouth to swallow them up entirely. You know what troubled me when I came to this passage? Why isn't Korach mentioned? Don't we always think of it in terms of the Korach rebellion? Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't say about a word at the end of the 40 years, doesn't say a word about Korach. He places all the blame on Doson v'aviram. Ibn Ezra, there are Chaim, others, and there are many proofs. We can take you through a lot of psukim proofs. Korach, in that rebellion, was the front man. The ideologists were Doson v'aviram. They were the ideologues. At the end of the 40 years, he wants Klal Yisrael to remember, be very, very careful of the Doson v'avirams. And what's amazing is, Moshe Rabbeinu was troubled more than everything. He was troubled by their having called Mitzrayim Ered Zavas Cholav Udvash. Ered Zavas Cholav Udvash. And I once said about this, there's a very beautiful letter from Rav Meir Simcha, the Or HaSameach. A letter that he wrote in 1921 after the League of Nations had approved the British mandate to establish a Jewish homeland on both sides of the Jordan. So Rav Meir Simcha wrote a letter, now that the nations, the enlightened nations of the world at the San Remo Conference have established the principle that Eretz Yisrael should be a homeland for the Jewish people, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael returns to what it always was, and therefore it now becomes our responsibility to pick ourselves up and begin to build that land. And then he says, remember something. Remember. There were two sins that the Jewish people sinned in the desert. One was the sin of the Egel, the golden calf. The other was the sin of the Meraglim, the spies. So he says, God forgave Jews the sin of the Egel. Those whose worship were punished, but we're marching on Eretz Yisrael. The sin of the Meraglim, there he said, Bamidbar Azeh, you're all going to die in this desert. The next generation is going to go in. So Rav Meir Simcha beautifully says, Al Kivodo, God's own honor, he was Michael. The Egel was an assault on the divinity of God. He can take that. That he was Michael, Klal Yisrael. The Meraglim was an assault on Eretz Yisrael. On Kvodo Shel Eretz Yisrael, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is not Mochel. No, siri. You can't speak evil of Eretz Yisrael. I believe Moshe Rabbeinu is doing the same thing. Korach was an assault on the leadership of Moshe. So what? Doson Vaviram were an assault on Eretz Yisrael. That is not Michael. And you know what he's going to say later? Moshe Rabbeinu is such a great educator. He's unbelievable. At the end of 40 years, it's 39, 38 years after the incident of Korach and Doson Aviram. He says, you should know, the land that God is bringing you to, Lo ke'eretz Mitzrayim hi, it is not like the land of Egypt. Do you know what was on Moshe Rabbeinu's mind for 38 years? He wanted to cleanse the minds of Jewish people from the terrible statement that was made by Doson v'aviram. Mitzrayim is eretz zavas chalav edvash. No, 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 no. He says over there, ולמען תאריך יום על האדום אשר נשבע השם לאבותיכם לתת להם ולזרם ארץ זבת חלב ודבש כי הארץ אשר אתה בא שם, the land that you're coming to inherit it, is not like the land of Mitzrayim from which you left. No. Forget that. Excise that out of your mind. It's not like Eretz Mitzrayim. This is land Asher Eine Hashem Elokecha Ba Meireishis Shona Ve'anachris Shona. Here there is Hashgacha Pratis. Here the Rebbeinu Shem looks over us. I still haven't answered the Shviga question. Who needs all of this? Who needs to know every ugly statement that's made by Dasan Aviram? Again and again, 7, 8, 9 times in Torah. What would our neshamas be lacking if we wouldn't know about it? I believe that I found a good part of the answer in a great essay by the Shemi Shmuel. The Shemi Shmuel was the Socher Tzaddik Rebbe. His father was the Avnei Nezer, who in the 19th century was, toward the end of the 19th century, he was one of the great poskim. And then came his son, the Shemi Shmuel. And Shemi Shmuel wrote a perush on Torah, very, very powerful, very beautiful. And there he talks, in one essay he talks about Dasan Aviram. And he asks the following question. If you've gone through all of the Sedras, Bereshmos, Vo'eda, Bo, B'shalach, you find that all of the suffering and torture that is brought upon Egypt has a purpose. The purpose is that Paro should know who God is. Leman Teda, in order that you should know, Ki Ani Hashem, that I am God. Leman Teda, in order that you should know that Ani Hashem, I am God, Bekedef Haaretz, in the midst of the land. Leman Teda, in order that you should know, Ki Ein Kamoni, there is none like me, Bechol Haaretz. Leman Teda, so that you should know, Ani Hashem, I am God, Bekedef Haaretz. Leman Teda, in order that you should know, Ki Li Haaretz, it all belongs to me. So the Shemi Shmuel asks, why does God care if Paro believes in him or not? You know, I think the Shemi Shmuel's kasha is like my Shviga kasha. You know, Paro doesn't believe. It's a big deal, so he doesn't believe. He won't be the first. He won't be the last. Rabbeinu Shalom, you can handle it. Don't get yourself so upset. There will come a time for Ho Yashem Lemelech al Kol Haaretz. You can do it any time you want. What are you getting all upset that Paro said, Mi Hashem, who is God that I should listen to? Don't get so upset, take it easy. So the Shemi Shmuel says, the point of it all is because there are Jews who are profoundly influenced by what takes place in the non-Jewish world. It impacts on us. It affects us. There are those amongst us who have this feeling that we want to find favor in the eyes of the nations of the world. They should just like us. We like to be liked. There are those amongst us who enjoy the idea of walking through the portals of power and statesmen and being a Jew who is accepted amongst Goyim. It may be very dangerous. I remember it was said by Rabin Olav HaShalom, and then it was said by Peres when they started making their peace agreements, Oslo and after Oslo. So they made the comment.
Good.
He needs to show me how to switch a tape. Why don't you have an automatic reverse like I do? And I remember it shook me to the core. Lo od am levodad yishkon. We are no longer going to be a people that dwells alone. We're going to be members of the family of nations. Whoever said you can choose your friends, you can't choose your family? Who wants to choose that family? Do we want to really be members of the family of nations? Such mishpucha I need. And what were they getting all excited about? That Keil Malei Rachamim, as we talked earlier, was said in the United Nations. Only 40 nations were there. There were about 120, 130 that weren't even present over there. It was the bezoyin of the highest order. So that's the mishpucha we want. Lo od am levada yishkan. So the Shem Yishmuel says, nations of the world have great impact on us, on some of us. And it's the ones who are most impacted that become the dosan vavichams of Jewish history. They want to find favor. They want to be able to move like equals in different places in the world. They want to be looked upon sort of with respect, as though these are statesmen, these are men of peace, these are men who are open-minded, these are people who have broad vision. And we pay an awesome price for it. What the Rebbe Shem therefore wanted is this same paro whom Dasan Vaviram look up to as the light of all nations, the sun. They have to know that he too is going to get down on his knees and say, Hashem hu Elokim, Hashem hu Elokim. And only then will the Dasan Vavirams of this world begin to look at themselves in the mirror and say what a terrible, terrible mistake we made all along. A mistake being made by a lot of our self-hating Jews is that they think that they are going to be loved, they're going to be respected, they're going to be able to move freely and with great dignity amongst the nations, and they're ready to betray their own people, ready to betray their own people. And unfortunately, there are many of them in our midst. Many of them in our midst. We have them here, we have them in America, we've always had them, but we've never, ever had them in the numbers that we have them today. The Dasan Vavirams, the Jewish Kim Philbys, or when I grew up, you know, why should I just knock the British? There was probably a lot of Englishmen here. There were the Benedict Arnolds, you understand. In America, we had a Benedict Arnold. But he gave information to the British. That's what made him a traitor. Gave information to the British. And there have been traitors. And we have, unfortunately, we have a lot of them in our very midst. And there's been a history since the establishment of the state of Jews who gave secrets to Syria, gave secrets to Egypt. B'nai kibbutzim grew up in the kibbutzim. So the Shem Yishmuel says the following. He says that this seems to be Jewish history in the period of Golus. That's Jewish history. There are going to be those who are going to betray their people. But there's one word of consolation. He says the closer we come to real redemption, the more frightening and greater will be this phenomenon. The more betrayers you have, the more certain you can be that redemption is coming. As the famous Maharal says, it's darkest right before dawn breaks out. Rav Kook, I think he wrote it in 1907. And everybody makes a mistake, certainly in the Haredi world, they make a mistake with regard to Rav Kook. They say that Rav Kook was Rav Avrom Yitzhak HaKohen Kook was such a lover of Zionism and Zionists, that Rav Kook was blinded. He couldn't see what these people were. They couldn't see straight. Rav Kook was a Kedosh Elyon with such brilliant insight. He wrote in a letter in 1907, and I have it on number 12 on the second side over here. Let's start with the third line. It's worthwhile to read his words. With that, we will just about close. Hayad harama hamechumeshet behefkerut v'tarkei hagoyim be'ein zeiche l'kedushat Yisrael be'emet. There is a hand that's lifted against us and goes in the ways of the nations without any understanding of the sanctity, the true sanctity of the Jewish people. Their Judaism is some kind of a phony nationalism. Begarganim shel historia, they seem Jewish because they're interested in Jewish history. Vishel chibat hasafa, they love Ivrit, they're able to ratata around in Ivrit. Hamalbishet achayim, and you know what they are? They are tzura Yisraelit mibachutz, on the outside it's Israeli. B'mokam shapnim kulo hu eino Yehudi, the whole inside is not Jewish. 1907. And you know what he goes on to predict? That there will be a generation that's going to come where those who were raised on this secular Zionism are they going to become monsters of Sinat Yisrael and Sinat Eretz Yisrael. Haters of Israel and haters of Eretz Yisrael. Frightening. He predicted it. The only word of consolation, of course, is that the Shem Yishmuel ends by saying, there he says it so beautifully, that there are going to be amongst us those like Dosam Vaviram, Hashem Hatov Yechaper Ba'adam. The good God is going to forgive them. V'shavu banim legvulam, children will return to Eretz Yisrael. V'akol yiyu nichna'im u'betelim l'dat Torah, and the time will come that everybody will accept upon themselves the yoke of Torah. V'yitkayim banu, the pasuk will be fulfilled of tzaddik be'emunato yichya, the tzaddik will live in his faith. We're going through a very difficult time. The only purpose of knowing all of this is be very wary. Be very careful not to be influenced by whatever you hear, whatever you read. Even if it sounds intelligent, be very, very careful. You may be making a tragic mistake. The Dosan Bavirams were able to say, without anybody in Israel standing up and protesting, I can't believe what took place at the Yom Suf. There are no... This is what you say to Moshe Rabbeinu, there are no graves in Mitzrayim, that's why you took us out? How come there was no outcry of Jews? Shkutzim! Shaigatzim that you are! How can you talk like that to Moshe? Klal Yisrael hears them say, you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Why wasn't there a Havganat Anak, Hamonim coming together to say, silence shall be the mouth that speaks that way to Moshe Rabbeinu? You know why? Because maybe there were those who were confused and weren't really sure. If that's what can happen, then how careful we have to be. Don't let yourself be influenced by so much that appears in the press, by so much that you hear on the radio. There is an entire process of brainwashing. We have to be internally free to be able to say, this I believe, and this I don't believe, this I object to, this I reject, and we have to be able to think things out clearly and not be lost in a maelstrom of terrible, terrible falsehood that passes for news or commentary. I know it well. One of my Avedas, now this is a public confession, one of my Avedas, I read the Haaretz every morning. I read the Haaretz every morning. And I once explained to the members of my congregation, story is told of one of the great Rosh Yeshiva in Europe that his Talmidim said about him, oh, he's completely immersed in Torah, he doesn't read newspapers. And you know what happened one day? Motem gechapt. They're looking past the window and early in the morning with his cup of coffee, he's reading a newspaper. The Talmidim were shaken to the core. And of course, as Talmidim will, you know, remind their Rebbe that they have to say Kriya Shema, he gives man Kriya Shema Shesachris. So they come to the Rebbe and they said, Rebbe Leiden, what's going on over here? Vashiva, we saw you read the newspaper. And before davening, so he said to them, you should know that after I read the newspaper, I know exactly what to pray for. After I read the Haaretz, you understand, I know exactly what to pray for. And I felt it important to me to be exposed to the absolute hatred of everything Jewish. It's a sinat to Eretz Yisrael. It's unbelievable what one reads over there. But that in fact exists. You have to be freed. You have to be able to think freely, think clearly. Torah keeps telling us about dosam vavirim because you have to know the purpose. Why is it Torah? It's Torah because you have to know that people who speak like that and people who think like that and look Jewish walk in our midst, and Torah wants us to beware. That's why, time and time again, all the ugliness of dosam vavirim is told to us clearly. Beware. Be intelligent. Be smart. Think for yourself. Don't parrot the words that you hear from this one or from that one. And unfortunately, you hear so many people parroting what have become slogans. We don't think anymore. We just say slogans. HaKibush Mashrit. HaKibush Mashrit. They decided that conquest, occupation, is destructive of morality. Not standing up for Jews is destructive of morality. Removing Jews forcibly from their homes, that's destructive of morality. What are you talking about? Israeli soldiers who protect Eretz Yisrael, these women of Machsom Watch, you understand? They should be all sent to jail. They're creating confusion. Yesh Gvul, there are so many groups out there. Malayim full of Sinas Yisrael and Sinas Eretz Yisrael. You have to beware. We're going through extremely difficult times. And when everybody around you is losing their heads, we should be able to hold on to ours, think clearly, think Jewishly, look for our answers in Torah, and yes, to our Rabbanim. There's nothing wrong, you know? They have a lot more brains than Chavrei Knesset, and that's not saying too much for rabbis. You need guidance and you need direction, and to ask how to think may be the most important question that you have to ask in this day and age. And I'm confident that in Yetz Hashem, the time is coming. In Yetz Hashem, we have to pray that everything will be well, because we're entering an extremely difficult period of time. We're going in a head-on collision. I mamish pray every day that somebody, some power, should be able to say, stop! Stop! Dead in your tracks. We shouldn't come to that terrible collision. Halavai yehi ratzon, that so it should be. Erev Tov, everyone.
Did you answer questions?
Yes, I'll answer questions.
Can we have questions, please?
Where does the Turek Karta stand? I don't consider myself an expert on the Torah Karta, but if you want to know, I'll tell you the following. I once said, apropos of this shir, Dosan Vaviram are two brothers. Why are they locked in a struggle to the death? So I said, Dosan Vaviram represent the two extremes in Jewish religious life. In the United States of America, there were two groups that were opposed to the establishment of the State of Israel. The Council for Reform Judaism, violently opposed to it. They lobbied President Truman not to dare recognize the State of Israel. And of course, Satmar and the Torah Karta on the other end. What do you think would happen if you put the Council of Reform Judaism and the Torah Karta into the same room? They'd kill each other. Dosan Vaviram represent the two extremes. The two extremes can join against the middle, but they will never be able to join one another. Did you read, you people from England? Yeah. This past Sunday in the Jerusalem Post, did you read the article by Penny Dunner? Penny Dunner. One of the ugliest Dosan Vaviram articles that I've read in a long time. Yes, he's so thrilled out of his kishkis that the religious Zionist house of cards is getting ready to collapse. Now the truth is out. You can give up parts of Eretz Yisrael. He even starts off by saying he and his people were opposed to the establishment of the state. With glee, he writes, like, it looks like the state is coming to an end. Yippee! We will be proven right. Show us your mind. Men stark raving mad. And I wasn't feeling well on Sunday or Monday, so I wasn't able to write a response to the Jerusalem Post. And most probably whatever I would have written on Sunday and Monday, they would never have been able to publish. But somebody on Wednesday had a very beautiful response. A fellow Muskin from Rehovot. I have to call him and say, Yashu Kayach. You saw, he talked in the name of Aguda, but he was clearly Neturei Karta. Clearly Neturei Karta. Unbelievable. Sick. Absolutely sick minds. And I don't understand. How can a Frum Eid? All Gedolei HaPoskim have said that it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz. What's the fellow sitting in London for? Sitting in London and speaking against Eretz Yisrael. It's unbelievable. We have sick people. Pini Dunner is a Dosan Vaviram. And you can tell him that in my name. Anybody else? Yeah.
I have to put the extreme element apart. How do you reconcile the people who have taken the Yoke of Torah, UTJ, who joined this government that is advocating disengagement? If they didn't join, they wouldn't be a government. How can Torah people join this government for disengagement?
Excellent question. I don't have the answer. I just say that there may be a number of answers in the offing. It seems there was a lot of hanky-panky there. A lot of... wasn't so simple. A member of my president was so upset, like you. And he comes over and he says, Kvod Arav, ani holech lechav yashiv. I said, you know, this guy's a Kippa Sruga guy. They won't let him within 10 kilometers of Rav Yashiv. Comes back to me 2 days later. Kvod Arav, I was by Rav Yashiv. I sat with him for 3/4 hour. And I asked him, how can you be in favor of disengagement? Now, I'm just going to report. Because you're going to start asking me questions like my wife does. We'll never get out of here. Yeah. So Rav Yashiv says, I agree with you. I'm opposed to disengagement. Something happened over there that we're not sure yet. He says, I'm with you. How do you like that? There was hanky-panky there. One of the leaders of Moetzet Yesha called me Friday afternoon and tells me that so far of the 9 admodim of Agudas Yisrael, 5 have already signed that they're absolutely against disengagement. Most probably by the end of the week, they'll have all 9 of them. something happened over there. You're asking a very good question. Just hold the question at least till I leave, and then see what'll happen. If there are no more, yes.
Since we're talking politics.
We're not talking politics.
Of course.
I don't like the word politics. We're talking pikuach nefesh.
Where do you place our great prime minister in this discussion?
I will only... I don't speak against prime ministers. I was once in jail. I don't plan on spending more time in jail. If you want to know about the prime minister, I suggest you read this weekend's Haaretz. The magazine section has a big full-page picture of Harav Yoel Ben Nun, who's been the darling of the left since Oslo, and they interview him. You'll hear what he has to say, that basically the prime minister is a profound tragedy of the Jewish people. I didn't say it. I'm just quoting him, you understand? There's a lot more. There's a lot more over there. I never thought that I would be on the same side with Yoel Ben Nun, you understand? But Pikuach Nefesh makes strange bedfellows. I think that's a very difficult question. I think you should address that to your rabbi. Also, after I leave. Okay, everybody. Yes.
Regarding the Gatan of Iran, we don't find in the Torah that they became Gushmat or they left the religion at all. I say that because looking into the history in England in the 1600s, particularly, there were very many Jews, very, very many Jews, who left the religion, became apostates. We don't see this in the Torah, so therefore the hope is that one day they will be Makarim in the real sense of the word. And maybe this is an example for us to learn from.
You've made an extremely important point. I agree with the point that you've made. I've said a number of times, I see Yossi Sarid in Or Sameach and Shulamit Aloni in Neve Yerushalayim. I mean, I see it clearly. Yeah. But you made an extremely important point. The danger of Dosan Vaviram is that they remain Jewish. Would they convert to another religion? We would sort of block them out. We would say, now we know that they're real traitors. It's because they remain part of Klal Yisrael that they are. They look Jewish, they sound Jewish, they speak Ivrit, very good Ivrit, they can quote Psukim and Mamore Chazal. That's what's the scary part about Dosan Aviham. And that's what's the scary part about our people today. Okay. I've had it.
I'm Rabbi Gerl. In thanking you for your lecture, which is on a very somber note, but we thank you for giving it. We have to know these things. You've given it with a great deal of clarity and good humor as well, and you've given us a ray of hope at the end of it. But I think what we've got to come away from your lecture with is that we have to be on our guard. We have to recognize rishus when we see it and when we and they hear it. And we thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
That's a call. I have one or two other announcements. Cut us with merger. What is this?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
The Rabbi goes. I'd like to thank Mrs. Irene Simpson and family for the ongoing
and sponsorship of the letters that we've been having for the past few years in the name of our dear departed friend, Julius, he didn't miss a seal and ever. And as much as Julius loved learning, I think we all loved him as well.
Yes.
Julius, he epitomized the very opposite.